If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Hello, old dogs. This is your host and top dog, Bill Manicero. I hope you're having a blessed holiday and are getting ready for an amazing new year. Today's show is a special rebroadcast of one of our most popular episodes. I'm introducing the show under the banner Best of Old Dogs REI Network Podcast. Well, enjoy.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge, dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we have a great show for you today. I got a fellow podcaster here with us. We're going to be speaking with Seth Ferguson, and he has more than a decade of experience in high-performance real estate. As the president of Alba Capital Group, he partners with investors to acquire and improve multifamily properties in key growth markets. Seth speaks about various real estate topics and strategy and is the host of Purchase to Profits, where he interviews successful real estate investors. Seth also holds his real estate broker's license in the province of Ontario and was thrilled to publish his first real estate book, Sell for More, in 2018. Well, Seth, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Thanks very much, Bill. I'm really looking forward to this. You do a great job on your show, and you definitely have a voice for radio.
So. I got a face for radio, that's for sure.
That's right.
Well, Seth, this is great to connect again with you. I was just recently on his show, and so this is going to be a kick. It's always fun to be on the receiving end of this now. He's going to get to kick back, and I'm going to have to, come up with some great, put him on the spot type questions, right?
I'm ready for it. Give me your best.
Give me your best shot. Well, Seth, this is going to be fun for me too, because I love Canada. I've been up there a lot of times, and it's just a beautiful part of this North American continent we're on here. I just love to hear also some of the unique aspects of investing up there. I know you do invest down here, I believe, too, but you can tell us all about that. Why don't you just give me your story? Where'd you come from? How'd you get into real estate and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, for sure. So I got into real estate mainly because of my father. My father had recently purchased a real estate brokerage. So I had been living in Minneapolis doing hockey. I was a full-time hockey referee with aspirations of making it to the NHL.
Wow.
But many of the people I worked with are now in the NHL. I just didn't make the cut. So as I was still doing hockey, selling real estate on the residential brokerage side gave me a good opportunity to have a flexible schedule so I could still travel around, do the games, and make a living at the same time. So that's how I entered real estate on the brokerage side. And then after a number of years, I realized that it's the people who don't do the deals, like broker them, but it's the people who acquire the properties that truly build wealth over the long term. And that really flicked a switch in my brain. So I started learning more and more about real estate investing. This was before YouTube was a big hit. And now with YouTube and shows like yours and mine, the wealth of information out there is just overwhelming. There's so much good stuff. And then I guess the rest is history.
That's great. Well, I would be curious to see. Now, you started obviously as a broker in Ontario, right? And did you also start investing in the same area, or did you start going other places right away? Or where? What about your investments? Where were they?
Yeah. So my first investments were single family homes. And those were centered in and around. I live just outside of Toronto in a town called Milton. And my first investments were in Milton. It was a market I knew like the back of my hand. I grew up there. I sold real estate there. So it just made sense for me at that time to start acquiring property in the market I knew the best. Since then, my investing strategy shifted over to multifamily. But for those first four properties, it was in and around my neighborhood.
Well, tell me about that shift to multifamily. Why not just keep buying single family homes?
Yeah, I think the many single family home investors run into a capital wall at some point where they want to grow their portfolio at a rate that their access to capital, it doesn't keep up. Also, I found the very successful investors that I was looking up to and taking advice from, they were able to use multifamily, that sort of asset, to scale their business in ways that isn't really possible with a single family portfolio. You know, on my show, I speak with people who have purchased 86 single family homes in 1 year. So you can have that scale, but you've got 86 properties spread out all over the place. To me, it just seemed like a better way to go, where you can acquire 150 units in one single property. You've got your dedicated management team. Then plus there's also the financing side. In Canada, lending is extremely tight right now. It is, you know, they want an arm, two legs, and your firstborn child before they'll give you a mortgage for a single family home. And that's tough as a self-employed person, because you have to go through a couple extra hoops because you don't have a W-2, or here in Canada, a T-1 for your income. So it was multifamily appealed to me for those reasons, mainly for the scale of it. I'm able to purchase those properties with investors, leverage their funds, and really drive a value add system to generate those returns.
Now, here in the lower 48, we have most banks don't allow you to have more than 10 mortgages. Do you have similar regulations up there?
It's the same thing. Mm. And it just makes it quite challenging. Then you have to get into the partnership, so you have somebody else on title of the house and carrying the debt for you. Like I said, there's many people who are incredibly successful at that single family, niche or niche. I just felt, for me, with my goals of real estate, multifamily was a better vehicle to accomplish those goals.
And tell me about the sort of the first foray into the multifamily world.
Yeah, so we are right smack dab in the middle of the first foray. So I am actively raising capital now. for my first acquisition. I think it's important whenever you're trying to move into a new territory, it's important to find a mentor or somebody who's been through that process before, so you can learn from them, leverage their network, all that kind of stuff. So I've partnered with some really great people who have done some amazing things in that multifamily space. So I'm riding not on their coattails, but I'm drafting right behind them as if we're racing bicycles or NASCAR. Taking any tips they have, learning from what they've done before, and hopefully improving on it somewhat.
Do you have anything under contract at this time, or you're just basically raising the funds and then we'll look to acquire something at that point?
Yeah, so right now I do not have a deal on contract. I want to have about $2 to $4 million committed before I put a deal under contract. So right now, like I said, I'm actively meeting with accredited investors and having those initial conversations about our strategy, our take, and what we see in terms of the markets we're looking at, in terms of how to, you know, drive that value and really push those returns.
Well, that's great. Now, you still have your single family homes still, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we can probably touch on this a little bit later on if you want to get into the extreme challenges I'm facing right now. But yes, I do have the single family homes. There's a personal situation in the works right now that will probably wipe out most of it, unfortunately. So it's, we'll see how that goes.
Wow. You got my curiosity going here.
Yeah.
Wow. And maybe just kind of taking a step back then, looking more at sort of the fundraising side. Now, how in the world did you launch into that? And what has been sort of your most effective way to attract investors?
Yeah, I think for anybody, you have to leverage your network that you already have. There's no point in doing cold calls to people. Cold calls, we're basically in a sales business. The money raising business is like sales. You know, you have your lead funnel, and it's always better to have a warm lead rather than a cold lead. And you generate those warm leads from your network because, you know, whether it's your uncle knows somebody who's an accredited investor, that's a warm introduction. And your chances of closing are a lot higher when you're walking in for that first initial meeting or having that conversation. There's less walls or barriers up between you two. So for myself, it was just a matter of letting everybody I knew in my network what I was now doing. I think I was fortunate in that I built a very successful real estate brokerage business for about 10 years. So I had a large number of people who knew me as a real estate expert. But now it was my job to let those people know that I'm now an expert in this other niche that maybe they hadn't been exposed to. So a lot of my work now has just been telling people, sharing with them the differences between single family and multifamily, sharing with them the advantages of both and the differences, and really just getting the word out there. I think that there's so many people in life where they always dream of getting into real estate, but they never do. So those are the type of people you're trying to reach out to. They know real estate's good. They've always wanted to do it, but they've never pulled the trigger. So they just need an experienced expert to help them. Maybe they would come in as a limited partner. They don't have any real estate experience, but they want to take advantage of the great things multifamily has to offer.
Now, when you made that transition from, you know, broker to investor, were there certain challenges that you encountered, as you were seeking to acquire properties?
I don't think so. I wouldn't say challenges. It's just you have to learn how to separate the two businesses. You know, you can't on your broker side, it's all about, you know, customer service and all that. On the investment side, you have to just look at the numbers and look at the long-term growth. And I'll say something that might be a little divisive here, but, you know, just because somebody's a real estate broker doesn't automatically mean that they're an expert in real estate investing. There's many real estate agents out there that I know who are amazing at the sales job, but they don't understand very much about the investing side of real estate. So I think it's important to make that differentiation.
Gotcha. And yeah. What is the market like right now up there in terms of, just as you've been out there seeking good properties? I'm sure you're looking for properties that you can get at some sort of a discount, I would imagine, as far as good investments are concerned.
Yeah. Would you like me to speak on the multifamily or the single family or both?
Both, actually. Yeah, I'd like to hear on both.
Yeah, so with here in the greater Toronto area, things have cooled off. We had the peak of the market in the spring of 2017. Last year, sales volume was at a very low level. Prices had eased up. So I would say, depending on your submarket, you could be in buyer market territory. So now's a good time to be looking to acquire properties. I do have some clients still on the brokerage side that we're actively looking and scouting for them to get them into, whether it's their first or second or third rental property. On the multifamily side here in Canada, cap rates are extremely compressed. We have people buying places in Toronto at a 2.5 cap, which is a different ball game altogether.
Sounds like Southern California.
it's just crazy. We do have, the key market drivers and the fundamentals are solid. Just the sheer population growth and the in-migration, for the next 20, 30, 40 years, the Toronto area is just going to be one huge growth. There's 200,000 people moving here a year. So that's really fueling a lot of it. But for myself and Alba Capital Group, which is my multifamily investment business, we're looking in markets such as Houston. I really like Houston. And so we're building those relationships. We're underwriting deals on a weekly basis right now. As soon as we have those funds, we're ready to pull the trigger and get something under contract.
And what kind of criteria do you have for the properties, the multifamily properties you're looking for?
Yeah, we're certainly looking for anything over 100 units. I like the scale aspect of it. So we're preferring in that, 150 to 250 range. I'm a big believer in the value add system. So ideally, we would be looking at something where it needs that lipstick renovation, nothing too heavy. But just your typical lipstick stuff, kitchen refacings, some floors, paint, that sort of thing. And we're also looking for management and efficiencies. So, we can go in there with my partners. We have the experience managing properties, so we can go in, clean up the management side, get those expenses down and really, push those rents as much as we're able to and have some value add. In terms of rents as well.
What kind of challenges are you facing in trying to find the right properties in the Houston area?
Well, like most markets, multifamily right now is pretty heated. The great deals are few and far between. So right now we are leveraging our contacts with brokers right now. This goes back to getting the right people on your team. The guys I have working with me, they've been around for a long time. They know exactly what they're doing. So I'm able to leverage their experience to get those introductions and contacts with people that would probably not even pick up the phone for me if I didn't have those guys on my team. But I think right now, and I get this message from a lot of the investors I speak with on my show, you can't be trigger happy and just do a deal just because you have to do a deal. In the way the environment is right now in multifamily, you have to be patient. Like you have to be aggressive in finding those deals, but you have to be patient where you're not jumping the gun on a deal that might work. You still have to have your solid underwriting. And I've noticed that because some people send me their underwriting on deals all the time, I've noticed that some people might be being a little bit too aggressive in how they're underwriting the deal right now. And they're not taking that conservative approach that they might have, a couple of years ago.
Sure. Well, you've been an investor for, what, 10 years now, right? So I just trying to, as you look back, maybe it's more recent too, what would you say maybe your biggest mistake was in that process?
I would say the biggest mistake was not speaking with the lawyer before adding an X to title on a whole bunch of properties.
Really? Tell me about that.
So that this goes into the personal situation in which I find myself now. So unfortunately, there's a messy separation where somebody wiped out the bank accounts and took a whole lot of money and stuff. So I think for myself, I've learned a very expensive lesson at a relatively young age about getting solid legal advice before getting into any sort of relationship that involves your real estate assets. Because, you know, when you first enter in a relationship, you don't think of the worst case scenario. But more and more these days, that worst case scenario does happen. So I think my advice would be to anybody getting involved in real estate with whether it's a wife or girlfriend or even a partner, make sure you speak with somebody, a lawyer who's very familiar with those structures, and make sure that you're looked after in the event that something does go wrong.
Now, do you have LLCs, your properties, as limited liability corporations, or is it different up in Canada?
No. Yeah. So there's a couple different ways you can do it. We purchased all of our properties in our own name simply because it made a lot more sense for us in terms of qualifying for those mortgages. There would be a couple less hoops that we would have to jump through. But it's, you know, the structure didn't really make or break the situation. It was just more the stealing of money.
Wow. Oh, gee.
So it is what it is.
So it's getting a good lawyer on your side before you actually set up your real estate investing or real estate business, right? I would imagine.
Huge. And most people, myself included, when you get into real estate investing or get into a relationship, everything, it's roses all over the place. Because you've been around for a while in the investing space, real estate deals go south, partnerships can turn sour. So you just have to know and lay those things out ahead of time so you don't get stuck.
Well, sort of on the other side of the coin then, what do you think you did right? What was sort of your biggest success?
Well, I think that the biggest success would be actually just doing it. And I know it sounds so cliche and everybody says you just have to take action, but it's so true. I know with the real estate sales side, I'd always have people approach me and say, hey, I really want to get into real estate. Can you show me how to do it? And 2 years later, those people haven't done anything. They're stuck in that analysis paralysis mentality where they're too afraid to do something, but they're just treading water. And that doesn't do them any good, because 10 years from now, they'll still be dreaming about real estate, but haven't done anything and have nothing to show for it. I think that one of the lessons I learned in terms of my successes was the power of leverage. By buying the right property, doing the right renovations, putting the right tenants in there, and then refinancing that and using the money that you took from the refi to now acquire another property, I think that's the most beautiful thing about real estate, because now I own another property with none of my own cash in the deal. So my return on investment is infinite at that point, because I just used all of the bank's money to buy another place.
That's great. Well, do you think there's certain skills or gifts that you realized, wow, this worked really well with my real estate investing, that you think, something that that has been a product or at least contributed to your success?
Yeah, I think the one thing I learned on the brokerage side was how important having the right market data is. Getting familiar with, vacancy rates, supply, sales volume, just where you are, and using that data to make educated decisions. I find lots of investors, they'll just pick a market because they like the market, but they don't know why they like the market. So I think understanding the key market drivers, what really fuels the real estate cycle. And that allowed me to move from that single family duplex investing to multifamily, because I'm already familiar with the terms. I know the numbers. I know what to look for.
So you're a bit of a research nerd then, huh? which is a good thing, definitely.
Yeah, it's a good thing, but you have to keep in mind that, you know, you can research all day long, but you still have to not use your gut, but you still have to do something about it. Like, you're never going to have 100% of the data you need. That doesn't exist. You know, you're never going to be 100% fully confident in anything you do, because there's always that gray area somewhere. So I think the research is very important, because that's going to give you a good foundation, but you still have to use like your street smarts in when you're looking at properties. So, you know, market data might not tell you that, oh, well, this is a huge value add opportunity right in front of you. But when you look at the property, walk around the neighborhood, you know, you're going to start putting things together in your mind that sitting in front of a spreadsheet won't give you.
Gotcha. Well, you know, our audience is primarily those that are 50 years of age and older. Some folks are approaching retirement. Some of them are already in retirement. And so we have a sort of a different situation, whereas a young guy like you, you know, you've got, you know, many years ahead. You can plot things out, you know, over a 20, 30 year timeline and so forth. But generally the folks that, you know, that we're speaking to are folks that kind of have built up most of their wealth already, and, you know, or they're already in it. They're already in retirement and they're, you know, looking for additional income, basically in the form of cash flow. What suggestions or advice would you have for that group in terms of getting started and being effective still in their situation?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first piece of advice I would give is it's not too late. I know some people I've spoken with, you know, they could be 60. They think, oh, I've missed the boat on real estate. That's not true at all. And even though I'm a young guy, I want to do some amazing things in real estate over the next 5 to 10 years, which is probably the horizon that many of your listeners are looking at. So we both have the same goal, whether you're 50, 60, 70, or here I am at 32, because I just want to compress those timelines like somebody would, you know, if they're about to retire. There's deals out there every day. And it's just a matter of finding those deals. And I would also say that when you're looking at deals, always have your end goal in mind. So, you know, if you're looking at retiring in a couple of years and want to live off that cash flow, look at the deals and look at the structure of how you build your portfolio that will let you accomplish that. I find lots of people, when they first get started in real estate investing, they don't have a plan and they just start acquiring properties, you know, willy-nilly without any sort of structure or any sort of plan. Work backwards. Say, I want to live off of X amount of passive income in 5 years' time. Then work backwards and figure out what you have to do and what properties you have to acquire to make that happen. I think that would be my best advice.
Great. Thank you. Well, what about your current business? It sounds like you're definitely on a new trajectory here. And what sort of your goals for the, you know, short term and long term?
Yeah. So my short term goal is with Alba, we will be having our first deal under contract by July this year. That's our goal. So we're going to be acquiring our first 100 unit plus property. With the capital raise of, you know, probably about $4 million. That's our short-term goal. Long-term goal, over the next 10 years, I want to have $1 billion of real estate under management.
Oh, that's great. That's yeah. Great. Well, going for the gusto there.
You have to go big. You can't go small.
Yeah, you got that right. Well, we are kind of zooming by here, and one of the things that we do near the end of our interviews here is we call it our wrap it up session, where I ask you a series of quick questions and you kind of share resources that have been valuable to you. And it's just another means to bring some good information that our listeners can use as they look at real estate investing as a means to help them in the future. So if you are ready, we can go ahead and start to wrap it up.
I'm ready.
Okay, favorite real estate book?
I would say The Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller.
Great, great book, yes. How about the favorite just general business book?
That would have to be The E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
Yeah, also another excellent book. How about most valuable website for success other than your own?
I would say BiggerPockets is a good resource for people getting started.
Yeah, good. Another good one. How about any favorite apps that you might use on your phone that have been valuable for you?
I would say the Google Calendar. that keeps me organized.
That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
And how about a favorite quote?
My favorite quote would be, if you think it's expensive to hire a professional, wait until you hire an amateur.
That sounds like my quote for contractors. And
it's so true. It proves itself true time and time again.
Oh, man, you got that right. Yeah. And then this one here, if you basically lost everything you had and built up over the years here and all you were left with is $1,000 in cash, what would you do with that $1,000 to relaunch your real estate investing business?
I think this question is extremely relevant because I am in that situation at the moment.
Wow.
So how I would use that $1,000, I would use that to build a platform in which I could share my knowledge with other people, which is exactly what I'm doing on my show, Purchase to Profits. I am sharing the knowledge and experiences I've had over the past 10 years and sharing the experiences my guests have had. And it's a giving mentality. You give first. And so you're giving out free information, all sorts of good stuff. And at some point down the road, that's all going to come back to you tenfold.
That's great. Have you ever heard of the book, The Go-Giver? That's an excellent reference along that same line of giving first and then letting everything happen afterwards. So yeah, that's a great approach. I like it.
Yeah, I've never read that book, but I'll make a note to find that at the bookstore.
Oh yeah, I think you'd enjoy it, definitely. Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening here too that would love to find out more about you and what you do. And what would be the best way for our folks to reach you or to find out about you?
For sure. So I will direct them to two websites. So the first website is sethferguson.org. You can find my background, information about Purchase to Profits, all that sort of stuff. And if you are an accredited investor looking for some great real estate opportunities, you can also go to albacapitalgroup.com, Alba, A-L-B-A.
Excellent. Well, gosh, the time has kind of zipped by here, and it's a shame because a lot of good information shared. I appreciate that. But we have a tradition here, and we always ask our guests to close us out with their best old hound dog howl. So, you know, you're a Canadian guy. It's probably like a lot of wolves up there and stuff.
I've got the polar bears beside my igloo. So, yeah.
So why don't you just go ahead and give me your best old hound dog howl. All right, that was a good one. That'll work.
All right.
Well, Seth, thank you so much for being on. This has been really a blast, and I really appreciate your sharing, you know, some of the challenges too, as well as some of the successes. I know that those are sometimes the toughest thing, but boy, we certainly learn from those. That's, I think, one of the big lessons we have in life is those mistakes that do happen that we next time we make sure we don't repeat.
For sure. And you know what? I will just mention that most of the incredibly successful people I've interviewed on my show, they all had something really bad happen to them, and they always came back far stronger.
Yeah, well, that's the truth. If you look at even the world's wealthiest men, you know, they've been through many a failure in their life, some multiple bankruptcies and other major disasters. But it's that persistence and that drive to just keep on moving forward and keep plugging on that really will get us where we ultimately want to go. So I agree with you on that one.
Absolutely.
Well, again, thanks, Seth. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Please note everything presented here today, including some of the links that Seth shared with us here, and will be available in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And look for the episode with Seth Ferguson. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.